Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to welcome you back to the Sling the Biscuit podcast. This is the new Sling the Biscuit podcast. We are episode 26. My name is Travis Ridgen. I play for the Motor City Rockers, currently on the season-ending IR. I am joined by Winnipeg radio legend, good personal friend, Mr. Dave Wheeler in the city of Winnipeg. How are you doing?
Oh, another day in paradise. A polar vortex is rolling its way through the prairies, so buckle down, everybody. We're going to see some winter.
You got your shovel ready?
It's not so much the shovel that I'm worried about. It's the it's the kids. It's the the vehicles not starting. Making sure things are plugged in. Make sure you unplug the vehicle. And I'm not talking Teslas. I'm not talking electric vehicles. I'm talking you got to plug in your block heater. And sometimes if you forget, you'll see somebody driving down the street with an extension cord rolling behind their vehicles because it's still plugged into the front of their vehicle.
I was gonna say like a photo was taken in a Winnipeg winter when you see a vehicle driving through downtown. Or wherever it is in the city of Winnipeg, and they have the extension cord wrapped around the driver's side rear view mirror. Or
the worst.
Is it side mirror?
Yeah, the side view mirror. Just the worst.
And then if you get lucky, you'll see a load of it dangling down, dragging down the road through the snow. It's one of the funniest things ever.
They need to put this in with block heaters. And if there's anyone that works in automotives, feel free to take this idea and just throw me a few bucks if you make any money on it. But you remember the old Electrolux, the elephant-looking vacuum cleaners? Where, if you just pull the cord, it would snap right back into the actual vacuum. That's what they need for block heaters. Something like that, so they can just snap it back. Simple.
My dad actually used to have one of those, we're talking a shop vac, right?
Yeah. Well, not necessarily. It was more elongated and had a big elephant nose coming out of it, and then it'd be your stand-up. Yeah, they were terrible. Yeah, you had to replace the bag in them all the time. They're not as good as the Dysons now are nowadays.
Yeah, I remember those. I actually got a Dyson. My mom ruined my Dyson. She was vacuuming up cat litter with it, and it's destroyed. Anyway.
That's for a shot back. Anyways.
Yeah. Anyway, I'd like to welcome everybody back to the podcast. This is episode 26, and the podcast has been doing well. We've got a couple of little housekeeping notes before we kick into the program. First off, podcast alumni, personal friend, fellow Winnipegger for both Dave and I, Mr. Ian White, played with him with the Motor City Rockers this season, sat beside him in the locker room. He just signed a deal to go play in the East Coast, in the Cheese Toast, ECHL, with the Norfolk Admirals. So, to Whitey, congratulations, man. It's been fun getting to know him and to see the progress that he's made. He's at a point per game in the Fed. Now he's got his East Coast contract, and it's just really, really, really exciting.
I would like to quote Nelson Mandela here for a moment that says, "Judge me not on my success. Instead, judge me on the amount of times I was knocked down and I got back up."
He's the textbook definition of that. I actually saw a forum for the East Coast Hockey League, people were talking about the signing, and they're like, "Oh, I want to know what happened to him in Detroit with Mike Babcock. I'm curious if there is any tension between the two of them." And I left comments to everybody. I was like, "Listen to the podcast with Ian White, NHL to the Fed. It's a great listen if you haven't listened to it. I think it's actually the most listened to episode of the podcast to date as of this moment in time."
Wow,
pretty cool.
I'll say, yeah, bringing in the big guns. I like it. Also, shout out to Tom, our new ad guy. Yeah, thanks, Tom. Thanks for all the hard work there, Tommy.
Oh, Tom at Gas Digital.
Yeah, Tommy in New York. Hey, how you doing? He doesn't actually talk like that, but I'm going to pretend that he is. Hey, guys, I got some ads for you. What do you know?
This is actually some news to the podcast. So the podcast, Sling the Biscuit, we've been, me and Dave handle everything from the recording to the video editing to the producing. Everything is Dave and I. And recently we were in touch with podcast network Gas Digital, and they're looking to place some ads in the podcast coming up. So if you see some new sponsors, whatnot, that's part of a new deal we're working on. And then hopefully, fingers crossed, we're potentially, Dave and I might be getting flown out to New York City sometime in the summer. And
easy now. You don't give too much away. It's not confirmed yet. I know we're excited.
There's some exciting prospects for the podcast coming up in the near future, and I personally can't say thank you enough to everybody for the support. If you're listening on Spotify, Apple, if you're on the video version of the podcast, to the people that leave a comment every episode, every week, and getting the conversation going, thank you to everybody, because this new potential podcast network deal for us is because of your support, and also because of Mr. Dave Wheeler. You make this podcast incredible, and it's been great since starting back up with you in July.
Big shout out to all the Patreon subscribers out there. Thank you very much. We appreciate it.
Oh, and also another shout out to, I didn't tell you this story before we started recording, but so my surgeon, now I can't mention his name. He mentioned keep his name off the podcast. I had a meeting with him 2 days ago, and he said he listened to the podcast. He heard the plug we gave him for him last week.
I'm sure he loved that.
Well, so we're talking about some updates for my hip, and I immediately thought when he mentioned the the shout out, I thought, oh, okay, I said some nice words. I said I did a great job. Everybody at the Pan Am Clinic in Winnipeg was great.
Yeah, you called them a little arrogant, but that's okay.
It then clicked in after I hung up on him. I said, oh my God, wait, I talked about how he was stroking himself off on the phone call for like 10 minutes and how good a job he did and that he had a late night out at Teasers. He's out of the club with the fellas and you know all these kinds of things. And I thought to myself, oh God, I got to see him in April. Is he going to be like, when I walk in the room and I shake his hand, hey doc, nice to see you. And he's going to think of like me talking about him at Teasers having a, you know, a late Saturday. Anyway, to my surgeon, you know who you are. I'm not going to mention your name. Thank you for the great work on my new hip. The chronic pain is gone, and I look forward to seeing you in April for an update with getting some X-ray stuff done and getting the green light to start skating in full gear. And I hope that I hope he has a great. Oh, well, I guess this podcast is going up on a Sunday morning, so I hope he had a great late night last night at the club.
Love seeing the surgeons out there. Absolutely, big tippers they are.
I did think the other day, wouldn't it be great if the next time he does this surgery, because he said that he does this Monday to Friday, this is his like bread and butter surgery, like nobody's better at this surgery in the city than him. If he just had an AirPod and he's listening to Sling the Biscuit while he's working on the next guy's hips, wouldn't that be? And he just has the segment where I mark off how great he was, and he just has that on loop. And he just listens to it back.
Like Dr. Strange of the hip surgery world.
Oh, man. I'd generally be curious to know, like, the day in the life of a surgeon, like, more so, like, what does the dude do after, like, he's done? Like, when he goes home to the wife, he's going to go hang out with the fellows, he goes to Boston Pizza, what does he order? Like, I want to know more about the life of a hip surgeon, specifically hip surgeon.
They're just like everyone else. They don't mind, like a couple beers with the boys. I'm sure if they're going to play a board game on a Friday night, they're probably going to play Operation, you know? That one makes sense to me.
I'd be curious if they give each other a hard time. If they go to play Operation and one of the guys is hitting the middle thing and it buzzes on him. He's like, oh, you're fired. That's a lawsuit.
I would actually pay to watch that reality show. A bunch of surgeons sitting around getting drunk playing Operation on the table. And not picking that guy for my surgery.
Do you think in April, I'm sure he's a busy guy, but when I go back to Winnipeg in April, I go to pick up my gear, I get my update on like my x-rays and all that kind of stuff. And I asked him, Doc, would you mind sitting down with me for 10 minutes, play Operation together, and let's film it and post it on the podcast channel? Do you think he'd agree to that?
Please, absolutely. I would die to see that on your YouTube vlog.
Did I tell you when I called him good looking and he got really uncomfortable with me or no?
Maybe he's good looking, he's good looking.
I told you about that, right, or no?
Yeah.
Yeah, he came in, he went to, oh, hey, Travis, how's it going? We're going to do the surgery. It's going to be quick. We're going to make a couple incisions. He took a Sharpie. He signed my hip because apparently, like, the doctors have to sign, right? And he makes the dots with the Sharpie. And he pulled his mask down, and I guess he, pushed up his glasses or whatever he did. And I said, God, you're a good-looking son of a bitch. And he says, huh, and then walks away.
Thanks. Well, another one of the reasons why they do that, too, is because, and a friend of mine's been a victim of this, he was actually I wouldn't say an accomplished piano player. He was more of a amateur piano player, but something that he liked to do. He's out of the bar one night and there's a piano he'll jump on, and he really enjoyed playing piano. He happens to get into a dust-up outside of a bar one time and really messes up his ring finger to the point where he's got to go in for surgery. So if you look at this side of my hand, for those watching on YouTube, and you count out the amount of fingers to the ring finger, it's 1, 2, 3, 4, right? That's the fourth finger. Except when you flip it upside down and you count this way, it's 1, 2, 3, 4. And so his hand was down when they operated on it instead of face up when they were operating on it. So they operated on his index finger instead of his ring finger. And then about halfway through the surgery, they realized, like, there's no damage in here. What are we? Oh, we got the wrong digit. So I had to stitch him up there and then go work on the ring finger. And so when he was in recovery, he was all wrapped up. And they're like, listen, when the gauze comes off, you're going to see more stitches than you're expecting. Here's what happened. And of course, he took them to court because now he's got two messed up fingers and piano playing isn't going to be as easy. But the reason why they mark things specifically before the surgery is so you can see it saying, this is the hip, right? And you go, yeah, that's the hip. And they go, great, I'm going to sign this so we're all in agreement. This is what we're operating on, not the other hip by accident.
You would actually be amazed from when they wheeled me when I walked into the clinic until they brought me into the surgery. They must have asked 30 times, your name is Travis? Yep. We're operating on the right hip, correct? Yes. Your surgeon is Dr. So-and-so? Yes. All right. And this is true? Yes. And they just kept asking and asking and asking and asking. My gym trainer, him and I were talking about this, and we mentioned, just make sure they wheel you into the right room, because there'd be nothing worse than if I went to go get surgery on my right hip and they accidentally wheeled me into like the sex change room, and you have some guy who's, you know, living off Davie Street in downtown Vancouver come out of the surgery saying, "Wow, like my hip feels incredible," and then me going,
"Why do I have a penis now?
Where's my dick and balls?" This something's changed.
Well, I'll be honest with you. There's been lots of mishaps that have happened over hospitals years, and that's just part of the industry. But believe me when I tell you, I had heard enough stories about babies getting swapped accidentally after they wheel them into the nursery area after the birth. As soon as they came out, I followed them all the way in, and I did not take my eyes off of both of my kids. And when each of them were born, I'm like, I'm not being a statistic. No way. I'm not taking my eyes off either of these kids until we leave this hospital.
I don't know if I'll get in trouble for saying this, but it would be funny if you had a family, you know, mother, father, whiter than sour cream, and they gave you like a caramel baby, and they're like, this doesn't add up. This is the wrong kid.
I've got a few horse. I'll tell you one that's an absolute true story. I told the story on my radio show years ago, and I've brought it up every once in a while. I think this is a good opportunity. True story. This comes out of Germany. These two guys are neighbors. One of them moves in next door, and they meet like, "Hey neighbor, how are you?" These guys are spitting images of each other. When they were walking around, people would confuse them as twins on a regular. They look that much alike. They did the DNA test. Turns out there's absolutely no relation whatsoever. Just one of those amazing coincidences that these two guys that look exactly the same move in next to each other. One guy's got two kids. The other guy has none. Him and his wife were trying to have kids. After about a year and a half of trying, he goes and gets tested, and turns out he's sterile. So over beers one night, he says to his neighbor, he's like, "Listen, I know this sounds weird, but we've pretty much got the same genetics. I already talked to my wife about it. Would you be the surrogate donor, old school, try to get my wife pregnant, and then that's it. You and I are the only ones that know about this." And so he had talked to his wife about it. They all agreed it was going to be okay. And so for 6 months, the neighbor tries to impregnate his neighbors and best friends' wife so they can have children. Tries for 6 months. Nothing happens. He goes and gets tested. Turns out he's also sterile, and those two kids in his house aren't even his. True story. So crazy things can happen in the medical field.
I don't even know where you're going on that one. But speaking of crazy things, one thing that I guess was our headliner for this week to talk about was so like 5-6 years ago, I ended up getting a trial with the Los Angeles Kings. And I think anybody that's, you know, seen my YouTube vlogs, you listen to the podcast, you're a first-time viewer, thanks for joining the podcast, by the way, or you're a day one OG, you've seen the LA Kings trial vlog. True or false, Dave?
It was funny. I don't think we've really explained how you and I came to be doing this, but I was a follower of your vlog from very close to the beginning, not realizing that you were a fan of my podcast, and you had sent me an email one day commenting on the podcast. I'm like, is this the same Travis Ridgeon that does the vlogs? I've been following your vlogs for years, and we just had this mutual admiration for each other. So yeah, I'm very familiar with the whole tryout and the trap for Oilers and the journey that started off the whole vlog.
Yeah, and I remember seeing on on the YouTube home dashboard, you get an update of like subscribers. So you get X amount of subscribers in the last 28 days. You see of those subscribers, who has the biggest following. You look lifetime to find the biggest YouTubers who follow you. And there was a period of time where Dave was actually, I remember seeing your name pop up for like recent subscribers who have a bigger following. This is when you're still working at, you know, 92 City. I believe it back in those days. But so the LA Kings trial was such an interesting turn of events. And actually, so Nick the goalie that we talked about last week, him and I, we went gear shopping to kind of go browsing the other day. And we ended up getting into this conversation about that. And this is kind of why it came front to mind, and I thought we'd talk about it for this week. So the LA Kings had a contest to, you know, basically win to be an emergency backup goalie. This is back in 2017, 2018. And it was because the previous year, the Florida Panthers went, you know, Luongo went down, Al Montoya goes in, Montoya goes down, and then they bring Luongo back in, and they have to dress the goalie coach to be the new backup. And then the NHL said, well, you have to have an emergency backup on hand just in case something crazy happens. And then hence, Scott Foster goes in and wins the game for the Chicago Blackhawks, shuts up the Jets, by the way.
Against my Winnipeg Jets, yep. It's happened in Carolina as well.
David Ayers, the Zamboni driver, beat the Toronto Maple Leafs.
The idea is, I think the new rule now, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but each home rink has to have like basically a neutral goaltender that can go in for either team if something like that happens.
No, I don't know how you define the term neutral, but yeah, so every team, the home team, supplies emergency backup goalies. So last year in Dallas, Thomas, I can't remember his last name, ended up going for the Ducks when they were playing against the Stars. I know for the Winnipeg Jets, they only take the University of Manitoba goalies. So they'll alternate. I remember a couple of years ago, it was, you know, Byron Spriggs one night, and then they changed to, you know, Justin Pollock, Dayson Sidora, and they just alternate through the University of Manitoba goalies for the Jets. And so every team does that. And the NHL said, everybody needs an emergency backup goalie. And then I guess the Devils and the Kings and the Panthers ended up doing a you know, contest out of it, a social media contest. And I remember seeing the contest and, you know, people messaged me saying, hey, you should, you know, put an application in. And I thought, come on, like, there's no way I'm going to get picked for it. But you know what? I got some free time today. I'm still in university. I'm going to, you know, throw an application and try to make somebody's day in the marketing office when they read this. And I just put, you know, name Travis, last name Ridgen. I played junior hockey for the Arbor Ice Dogs at this moment in time. And why should you be picked to come, you know, try out for the Kings and be the emergency backup goalie? And I think the description I put in that box was, I would have the greatest Tinder profile picture of all time if I came down to this tryout. I promise you that. And then I remember a week or two later, or maybe it might have been a couple days later, I get an email saying, hey, this is Luke Robitaille. Congratulations, you've been invited to come try out for the LA Kings. The tryout is in 2 days. Here's the details. And I remember thinking to myself, like, this is a prank. There's no way this is real. And then I ended up looking online. The Kings announced, hey, we've contacted the people. They're going to be, you know, invited to come out. I see other, you know, social media people like Linda Cohen, I think at Barstool announced, like, she posted the email, the same one that I got, and I thought, holy shit, this is real. And then, so I ended up the next day, because I hummed and hawed over it overnight, because keep in mind, I'm in university, I'm not full-time on YouTube, I'm still playing Junior B hockey, I'm working a, you know, part-time / full-time job, because, like, YouTube ain't paying the bills. I hummed and hawed, should I do it, should I not? And I thought, you know what, whatever, I want to go to LA, I'm going to go do this little tryout thing and see what happens of it. Booked the ticket. It was like a $800 round trip from Winnipeg to Calgary, Calgary to LA and back. I go, I buy the ticket, I take the day off or 2 days off of university, tell my junior team I'm going to be gone for a few days. I go down, I check into the gate, and I think to myself, like, what am I doing? I just spent $800 I don't have to go fly down to LA to go skate with a bunch of their coaches and take shots.
To have an experience of a lifetime.
I didn't know that at the time because in my head, I thought, okay, I'm going to make a cool video. It might get 4,000 views, might get 5,000 views. At this point, the junior hockey vlog that, you know, people seem to love was doing 10, maybe 20,000 views, maybe a little bit less every time I posted a video. But I'm already checked in at the gate. I spent the money on the trip. Whatever, we're going to go do it. So I spend the whole time just kind of worried about it. I just spent a lot of money that I don't have. This is a really bad idea, but let's try to relax and try to enjoy ourselves. And obviously, people seeing the viral clip of me asking out the LA Kings reporter, Caitlin Bates. I can't remember what her name is, but she worked for Fox Sports. And she did an interview with me. I asked her out live on TV. And she said, oh, I have a boyfriend. I said, well, I'm not asking about your boyfriend. I'm asking about your number. And besides, even if you do, you could have two. And so that ended up popping off. I remember later that night seeing, like, on all the local LA news, the clip of me, you know, hitting on her on live TV and thinking, oh, it's interesting. This is, like, on all the news channels. So, okay, whatever. So I do my video. I go home. I post the video. It does, like, 4,000 or 5,000 views overnight because I posted it, like, 8 or 9 p.m. at night. Next morning, next afternoon, it's quiet. Still same thing. I finish university that day, and so I'm out of school by, like, 3 or 4 p.m. 250,000 views just exploded. It's on the front page of the NHL.com, LA Kings website. The Kings have reposted. Like, it's everywhere. Even Linda Cohen reposted the video, and I'm like, this is crazy. This thing's taken off, and that video exploded to now, I guess, you know, 1.5 million views on YouTube. It's my most viewed video by far. And that video, that the experience changed my life because I remember gaining like 10,000 subscribers in like 3 days that day or over the next couple of days. I got sponsorship opportunities. It just helped kickstart my YouTube career, making original videos in a way that I never would have otherwise. And it was the most life-changing moment and event that I've ever had on YouTube up to this point in time. Well,
Andy Warhol said something about 50 years ago or so and said, everyone will have their 15 minutes of fame. Now, what you decide to do with that is totally up to you, but I don't think he knew how, maybe he did because he was an absolute genius, but I don't think he realized how right he was going to be when the age of social media came about.
It's so true. Like think about the concept though, even 10 years ago, how would I, Travis Ridgen, in reality, a junior B hockey goalie in Manitoba, get my name out to people and be able to help and influence the goalie community and win a tryout for the LA Kings. Like, that never would have happened otherwise without the social media realm of everything.
Well, Will Smith tells a great story, not too dissimilar from yours, when he was asked by Quincy Jones to audition for the role of basically to do the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. And he said he had to take the bus there. And basically, there's a party going on and whatnot. And it was right in the middle of the party. He's like, why don't you just show us what you got right now? And he realized in that moment, either I do this and they say no, or I don't do this and I wonder forever, what if I would have just did it? And he did it, and he ended up becoming the Will Smith we know. The slapper! Slapping Will Smith!
Keep your wife's name out of your mouth.
But it comes down to, what do you do with that opportunity?
Well, I flew my drone in the parking lot of the Toyota Sports Center. I went and hit it on a news reporter live on TV and wouldn't take no for an answer. Similar to so many reasons why I was able to win so many radio contests on even your station that you worked at for many years. True story. That's actually another story. We should get into that later. I won Shinedown tickets from you twice. Well, from 92 City twice. Both times didn't go. But we'll get into that a different time. And that LA Kings opportunity was, it changed my life. It changed the whole outlook that I had and prospects I had on, you know, making YouTube videos and being able to have this be my full-time job, full-time income the last 4 years. And now this podcast taking off is, again, because of the LA Kings.
Well, let me be the first to congratulate you. And, you know, I again, Nelson Mandela, judge me not on my success, the amount of times that I've been knocked down and I got back up. So, if we're going to talk NHL, there's a gripe that I have that I want to get into. But speaking of life-changing events, I told this story on my radio show. But I'm over the age of 40 now, and so I got to go in for, you know, the uncomfortable checks with the doctor once a year and whatnot. And believe me when I tell you, everything's fine, by the way. Sheath underwear has really, especially at I'm 43 years old, it's been life-changing for me to actually have a set of underwear that I can, I know it sounds weird, but like rely on and just know that everything's going to be right there when I get back.
It truly is life-changing. From the bamboo mesh technology, it is cooling. On a hot summer day, there's nothing better than putting on a pair of Sheath underwear. Even right now in the winter, I put in brackets if you're watching the video version, winter here in Vancouver, Sheath underwear is cutting edge, and I'll tell you why. It is because of their dual pouch technology, which is a separated, segregated compartment to put your dick and your balls into. They both go into separate spots, so they don't touch. They physically cannot touch because they're divided by the amazing bamboo mesh technology in the pair of Sheath underwear so that they can breathe. They won't be sticking to the side of your legs. So, for example, I don't know if you can hear it. There's a construction team working on building a new building right outside of my apartment here where we're recording. I bet you everyone on the job site, all 200 members there, got their balls and their dicks stuck to the side of their leg. But if they were to take off their construction high-vis vest and put on a pair of Sheath underwear, they would feel great. They could probably work 12, 16-hour shifts instead of the 8 and 10s that they're doing right now. But they and you can do that as well. You got to go to sheathunderwear.com. Use the code BIZKIT69. That is BIZKIT69. That's going to get you 20% off the greatest pair of underwear money can buy. And there's a reason Sheath is the presenting sponsor for this podcast every week, because you cannot get better than a pair of Sheath underwear. It's owned and operated, founded by a former U.S. Marine in Robert. And Robert just continues to change the game with his Sheath underwear technology.
Robert, this may sound weird, but thank you for taking care of my junk. Thank you, Robert.
And making Dave's wife a little bit happier.
Yeah. If your name was Richard, it would have been way cooler.
Thanks, Dick.
Listen, NHL All-Star Game's coming up here right away. I'm trying to figure out who are they trying to market this clown show to? Because just to give you an indication, this has been going on since like 1947. In the old days, it would be like it was a much different format. It would just be a game, and then they introduced the skills competition. And then in recent years, they have, you know, the different divisions play against each other in a mini tournament. And they can't seem to find any. It's like the Pro Bowl. No one's going to get hurt. No one's really blocking out there. It's an offensive display. I think for Canadian markets, we don't want to see that. It doesn't interest us that at all. I mean, it's fan service to be able to see all these guys in one spot and get autographs and pictures and that kind of stuff. The fan service for that is cool. But if you're trying to sell the league down to some of these southern markets, and I'll just give you a rundown. You've got the Vegas Golden Knights, who had it last year. Florida has it this year. St. Louis the year before that. San Jose before that. Tampa Bay before that. LA before that. Nashville before that. Columbus before that. The last time an All-Star game was in Canada was over 10 years ago, and it was in Ottawa. Before that, it was Carolina, Atlanta, Dallas. I mean, I don't think the people down in the South are going to hockey games to see skilled players when they don't understand what the skill is. They are down there to see NASCAR on ice.
No, I couldn't agree more. I think that there's a very misunderstood demographic down in the South. So when people think of hockey and they think of hockey down in the South, they think of the Atlanta Thrashers having 4,000 people in the arena. They think of the Phoenix Coyotes having to move to a college arena because they couldn't sell the building. But for me personally, when I think of Southern hockey, I think of down in the Fed and the SPHL. I think of the Macon Mayhem. I think of the Columbus River Dragons, Carolina Thunderbirds, Mississippi Seawolves, soon to be the Baton Rouge hockey team or hockey club, whatever they call the team. And the thing that's nuts about down playing in the South is that you have very knowledgeable hockey fans in, let's say, the Michigans and the New Yorks, but in the South, they don't know why they like hockey, but all they know is that they love it. They see it as football on ice. And granted, the people in the South, they may not know what an offside or an icing is, but they know when two guys score off at center ice and they drop the gloves, they love it. They love seeing a goal. They love seeing what you mentioned before, Dave, was NASCAR on ice. And I would say this, the Southern fans, the you know, Southern U.S. fans are the craziest, most passionate hockey fans I've ever encountered in my life. I mean, you look at, I know this is apples to oranges, you look at the Fed attendance for this season, the Columbus River Dragons are getting almost 5,000 people a game. The Mississippi Seawolves are getting 3,000. Carolina sells out. They have a 3,000 capacity. They get 3,000 every night. In the Baton Rouge expansion game, so the Baton Rouge is the new expansion team in the Fed for next year, and they did two games between Mississippi and Port Huron and then Mississippi and Carolina just to kind of test it out. They had 9,000 people in the arena, Dave. There's not even a team there officially. It's a exhibition game, an exhibition match. And they got 9,000 people. These people don't know why they like it, but they just love hockey. It's crazy.
I'll give you a couple reasons. Number one, if you're down in some of these Southern markets and it gets hot as balls down there, you're telling me that for like $20, maybe even less, $20, I can go sit in a, not even air conditioned, but a nice, cool arena where I don't have to worry about sweating. If I didn't remember to bring my sheath underwear that day, I can grab some, I get cheap beer, I get a hot dog. It's 2.5 hours of entertainment, where something I really don't understand, but I see a lot of guys banging bodies down on the ice, and the odd time there's a goal and people jump up and yell, and that's a lot of fun. But do I get to stay cool in this Southern heat? I'm in.
It doesn't get any better than that, especially at the price that you just mentioned. I think even like you look at the All-Star game, like you mentioned, it's an offensive explosion, but there's no physicality. There's no fighting. I would love to see like a king of the ice or like a king of the ring, kind of like a fighting competition. I know they would never, ever do that.
Oh, they've done it before, and it's just been an absolute...
No, but like for like the NHL All-Star game to have... Oh, God. Like, that's what I'm talking about. No. I know...
You want to see Wilson and Reeves go at it? And here are two tough guys who have had a lot of beef over the years, and we're going to let them go at it at center ice, and then they're going to hug after and high-five and on the way.
I got to be careful what I say, because I'm sure you've heard of him. Daniel Amesbury, Diamond Hands Amesbury for the Danbury... the Trashers, but the Danbury Hattricks. He has competed in rough and rowdy. He's 4-0, and he's just a... They call him Diamond Hands for a reason, because he's got diamond hands for knuckle. He's a tough dude. By the way, from Vancouver. I'm trying to get him on the podcast for this summer, but he's not going to be in Vancouver. He's going to be in Danbury, Connecticut. But anyway, you have guys like that would be a great addition to an All-Star game, even if there was even like a Fed All-Star game. But to bring it back, to have like an NHL All-Star game, you got like Reeves, Wilson, you have DeLoria, you have all these tough guys, like a Wayne Simmons, and just have like a fighting competition. I bet that would sell out an All-Star game down in...
But you know better than I do, there's no way Gary Bettman's going to highlight that that's what this league is about. And that's what you're doing. If you highlight something like that, then people are going to expect that all the time when they're trying to get away from that.
Well, and I think that's why this kind of apples to oranges or even like apples to asparagus, but why the UFC is so popular. Because when it first came in, it was gladiators in the ring. It was like caveman mentality of like, what are you guys doing? To now, I could be mistaken. The UFC is the most popular sport on the planet. It's the fastest growing. Like they're every single year, they grow the audience. They grow the market. It's crazy. And you see the NHL's decline. The NHL was, I believe, a top four sport in North America. Now they've popped out of there. And I believe, I could be wrong, Major League Soccer has taken that over, if I'm not mistaken on that.
Well, I remember watching highlights on TSN back in the day, or even ITV in Edmonton for anyone that's in that area. You may remember Darren Dutition doing the highlights there. When you'd watch the highlights of the game, they'd show you, and a good dust-up between Semenko and Probert, or whatever it may be. They would show you the fight as part of the highlight package. Now, you go online, the only way, like even if there is a epic fight that happens between Wilson and Reeves, they're not showing you that on the highlight package on YouTube that the NHL puts out, or Sportsnet, or whatever it may be. You actually have to go to hockeyfights.com if you want to find that kind of stuff. Like they do not want it associated at all. Like they admit it happens, but you got to be there to see it type thing. You know what I mean?
Agreed. And I think, too, I think the Fed is a good example of, like, the Fed and even the SP to an example, or to an extent, I should say. They want to market themselves as a skill league. You have the NHL, skill league, AHL, skill league, East Coast. Like, everybody's a skill league. And there's not a big market for that. It's tough competition. But nobody wants to market themselves as this truculent, testosterone-filled, you know, to use the Brian Burke terminology, you know, tough hockey. As opposed to, like, if the Fed or even the SP was just to take a step back from the we're a real skilled hockey league to we're a skilled hockey league. But we are a traveling circus on ice. Like, we have these tough dudes, these absolute meatheads fighting every night. Every team has a tough guy in the Fed. Every team has a dedicated guy that dresses for fights. On top of, we have skilled guys. Like, it would be, I think, such a great marketing opportunity for the Fed and the SP. I mean, just, I have so many ideas, I think, that could help with the Fed and the SP, but
well,
yet to see.
The Federal League didn't do themselves any favor by naming it after 1977 Slapshots League, where, you know, that's basically what it was. And then you look at the Quebec League once upon a time. They actually did a documentary on the Quebec League, which was basically like, we're signing up fighters, period. Like, we're going to run a clock and we're going to throw a puck out there, but that's really not what this is about.
But the one restriction to that was, though, I could be mistaken, was you had to be born and raised in Quebec or have some type of, like, Quebec ancestry to play in that league. Like, me or you could not play in there, where we were not allowed to.
I had a friend of a friend who ended up playing in that league for a little while, and I don't think he lasted very long. He's like, no, this is not for me.
Yeah. Speaking of not lasting very long, you want to talk about the new expansion team, a third expansion team in the Fed? You want to get into that?
Well, it's not going to surprise me because, I mean, how many interchangeable cities have we had in the Fed over the past 5 years? I was doing some research, and it seems like there's a new one popping up every year.
Yeah, I would say if you look at the history of teams, I'd say every 3 to 5 years, half of the league turns over just because profits are tough. It's tough to stay afloat. I think a lot of teams want to make money early on. They spent a bunch of money to come in the league. They want to make it back, and they don't realize you got to grow the fan base, which is why teams like, you know, Port Huron, Columbus, Carolina, they're thriving, is because they've built that fan base, and it's crazy. But so next year in the Fed, so the Baton Rouge expansion team is confirmed. I believe they're going to be a red and black team, but there's no name yet. But Baton Rouge will be coming in. They're supposed to be a Virginia team. I can't remember
where. If anyone Baton Rouge is listening, the Baton Rouge Red Sticks, because that's actually what Baton Rouge is French for red stick. So you call yourself the Baton Rouge Red Sticks. I think that's a great name.
So the Baton Rouge Rouge Batons?
Yeah, pretty much.
That would be pretty funny. Inside joke, but so they're going to be coming in. A team in Virginia, and then apparently, this is hot off the press, apparently there's going to be a third expansion team out of New Jersey for next season. The same owner who's going to be having the Virginia team and also owns the Delaware Thunder, the Mississippi Seawolves. I think he owns one other team, the Port Huron Prowlers. So he's going to be bringing a third team into New Jersey. And I just thought, like, what an opportunity. Why Jersey? I don't know. Well, I think that just location-wise, you have two Michigan teams in Motor City and Port Huron. You have all the Eastern teams. So you have Watertown, Binghamton, Danbury, and then Delaware. And then you add a Jersey team. So you have five teams in that that division. And then the South, you'd be adding Baton Rouge to the already Carolina, Mississippi, and Columbus. So you'd be, you know, further bolstering that Southern division. So I think it is a good idea to grow the game potentially, like down there, especially when you have Virginia as well as New Jersey. So you could have six Eastern teams and then have the Michigan teams join the Southern division. But what an opportunity, though, for next season to have three expansion teams. From my perspective, there's six new goalie positions added to the league. I don't know if anybody would be willing to take me, but what an opportunity it would be. I will say this, and I want to be very clear. I love the Motor City Rockers. I am thankful for the opportunity they were giving me. I want to make things work in Motor City before anywhere else. However, if the opportunity did come up where Motor City was to move on from me and there wasn't a fit where I'm going to play, if I was just going to, for example, sit again next season, I would love nothing more than to get picked up by a Southern team where, like we mentioned, the fans are so crazy. You imagine Dave playing in front of 9,000 screaming fans in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Beautiful weather. I don't have to deal with winter. No snow. Come on.
Dude, I've known a handful of guys who have gotten the opportunity to play in the show down south, and they said there's nothing like getting out of the rink wearing shorts, man. It's pretty cool.
Especially in December. Shorts, flip-flops, and a beater.
Mm-hmm. That sounds like a pretty good gig. And a lot of these guys are willing to give up, you know, the major markets like Toronto, New York, where they can't walk the streets without getting mobbed for autographs, to have that really laid-back lifestyle. All you have to worry about is hockey. You know, you're not getting 50 microphones shoved in your face after a loss like you do in Toronto. It's just you go about your business. You may not get as many fans, but you get paid just as much, and you get to go surf, you know, surf or hang out on the beach or whatever it may be. A lot of those guys dig that.
Or the toughest coach in the league, Andre Nisch in Carolina. In Carolina. The weather's Nisch. Great. I sent Dave some clips before we started recording, but so I was informed last week after we had our talk about, you know, player fan fights, there was a player fan fight between Elmira and Carolina a couple of years ago. And I'll put the clip on the screen for the video version, but it's a game two of the championship final. One of the fans throws a beer in the face of the Elmira goalie, Troy Passingham, and he just cleans this guy's clock. Boom, blocker right to the face. All hell breaks loose. Player fan fight. That was the most recent one that happened. And another one that comes to mind, although it wasn't player fan, player coach, was a couple of years ago in the first season that Columbus came in the league. Columbus is in Carolina. And for whatever reason, the Carolina coach jumps over the stanchion the Columbus coach jumps over the stanchion to go give a mouthful to the Carolina coach. And he's hanging over the boards. I'll put the video on the screen here as well. And the Carolina coach gets ejected. And on his way out, he decides to make a quick pit stop to the Columbus bench and fights one of the Columbus players in the Columbus bench, their head coach, Andre Nisch. And I got to say, so this guy ends up losing his dress shirt in the middle of the fight. A pretty stacked guy and a pretty tough guy for going in with dress shoes and everything to go and fight one of the other team's players in their bench.
Okay, I'm going to tell you a quick story about my youth. And it'll lead into kind of similar to what we talked about last week, as far as, you know, like you can say whatever you want, but once you break that that line and you start getting physical, all bets are off. Now, my father was a very interesting human being. He didn't like people a whole lot, and so he wouldn't show up at the first period, and he'd be gone by the, you know, end of the second, but he'd show up for about a 10-minute window so he could have his French fries and gravy at the rink, which is his favorite, and just see enough that he could criticize me when I got home. And so I remember this one time I get back and I was like, hey, how much of the game did you see? He's like, I saw you get into a fight. That was pretty stupid. And I was like, what do you mean? I was sticking up for my goaltender. He goes, you have leather gloves on your hands and you have a stick and you dropped both of those. That is the dumbest thing I've ever seen. Why would you bust up your hands and when you have a weapon in your hand? I was like, Dad, I don't think you understand the code of what happens when you fight on this. He goes, dumbest thing I've ever seen. So he didn't really understand that because he grew up fighting quite a bit. Anyone that is dumb enough to jump in to a fight where a bunch of guys are literally wearing armor with sticks in their hand, and there's no code when it comes to fighting a fan. There's no code. If you're dumb enough to cross that line and get into it with one of these basically armored ninjas, That's on you. I don't want to hear anyone crying victim going, No. You broke the line. That's it. That's on you.
I think you're forgetting about the most important part is that, you know, yeah, we're gladiators on ice, but what about the knives and the feet? You have knives being supported by a 200-pound man to whack your feet off while you're wearing your Air Force Ones.
And if I'm on the bench, I'm going to get a lot better footing than I am on the ice. So, do you remember that idiot who jumped the boards one time? This was back in the 80s, jumped the boards to go talk to one of the referees. And the other referee at full speed hammers it. If we can get that on the screen, please do. Hammers it in the back. Like, you just don't do that.
Just a huge CFB from behind right in the boards. Or the fan that tried fighting Rob Ray in the bench while the fan was on the ice.
Unbelievable. Just listen, this is one of the arguments to why they probably shouldn't serve excess alcohol at some of these games, because some people get a little too brave, but all bets are off if you want to start entering the... It's no different than going to the circus going, you know what, I'm going to go talk to the lion. I'm really not comfortable with what's going on with the lion here. I think I can have a civil conversation with the lion. You're going to get eaten.
Is the lion Andre Nisch coaching Carolina?
from the looks of that video, holy moly. Yeah, no kidding.
What a monster. He also got tossed again in Columbus. They're in Columbus, not Carolina this time. And the ref says to him, again, video on the screen. This is a video on the screen podcast. If you're on the YouTube video version, if you're on Apple or Spotify, you're missing out. But ref comes over to the Carolina bench and says, Andre, you're out. See you later. And he says, no, I'm not. Andre, you have to go. I'm not leaving. Andre, you need to leave. He's like, you're going to need a wrecking ball to take me out because I ain't leaving. Jordan Belfort-esque.
I'll tell you, I don't know why the NHL hasn't figured this out yet. This is one of the easiest solutions to stop that kind of stuff from happening, okay? You talked about the guy that crossed the stanchion between the two benches. This is the easiest solution. NHL, AHL, ECHL, whoever's listening, hear me out. If you are the home team, you are on one side of the ice, and you get the penalty box on that side of the ice as well. So if you have a player in the box and you want to make a quick change, they don't have to skate all the way across the ice. That's called having home ice advantage. The other team, the visiting team, goes on the opposite side of the ice. Now you completely remove that situation where coaches are going to be going at each other back and forth. They've got to yell across the ice going, "What did you say? What?" You completely remove that variable from the equation.
But then you have them sharing the same entrance and exit to the ice, and they got to walk side by side to the game.
Not if you build it properly. Depending on the rink, you can set up dressing rooms and on one side, dressing rooms on the other side. This is a really easy solution. Lay down a piece of carpet. They do it for the anthem singer all the time. If they need, you send off one team, the other need teams to go, you put down a carpet for the coaches so they can walk across the ice and not have to worry about slipping.
Unless you're Mark Donnelly singing the national anthem, you just go ass over tea kettle while singing the anthem.
We're making way too many video references right now. Sorry to the podcast listeners.
I'm going to be spending like 6 hours putting in video clips into the podcast afterwards. But everybody listening, Dave Wheeler would like all arenas in the Fedzino torn down and rebuilt with new penalty boxes and new dressing rooms.
It makes sense. And by the way, if you want to search any of these videos we're talking about, hopefully you're using a VPN called NordVPN, because that's the easiest way to surf the internet without any worries. You can bounce around the world from server to server and make sure that your information is protected, because more than anything, you don't have to leave your house sometimes in order to get robbed. Your money can get stolen. Your identity can get stolen. NordVPN, I would say, best in the business as far as making sure you keep you safe.
Best in class. And we have a new partner here, the Sling the Biscuit podcast. They were here last week and they're returning in this week, and it is NordVPN. Now, I've used Nord for almost 3 years. It's awesome. Now, I use NordVPN to stream all of my live sports for free, and they are a streaming website that I use religiously that give me access to SHL hockey, NCAA, the Stanley Cup Finals, and my personal favorite, the UFC pay-per-view matches, all for free. But these streaming websites can compromise my personal information and, you know, the device that you're on, and they leave you exposed to cyber threats. But when I connect to one of NordVPN's over 5,000 servers in 60-plus countries, they are incredibly fast, and they work with every major platform from Windows, macOS, iOS, Android, and more. And they will help you stream your live sports for free, worry-free, same way that me and Dave do every week. I know that the UFC, big UFC matches are coming up in March, and I'll be using NordVPN for that. But you can get the best pricing. Stream it for free. Why pay for cable? Why dish out an extra $100 you don't have to when you can just get NordVPN, get peace of mind, stream worry-free, and if you're traveling, you're using public Wi-Fi, this is what you need, and you can get it. And you get the best pricing that Nord has to offer when you go to nordvpn.com/biscuit. That's nordvpn.com/BIZKIT. There's going to be a link in the video description and a link also in the podcasting notes, and you get NordVPN on a 2-year plan plus a bonus gift on all part of their risk-free Nord 30-day money-back guarantee. There's, again, a link in the video description, in the podcast notes, if you want to pick up NordVPN and support the Sling the Biscuit podcast. Thanks, listen, Nord, for partnering with us.
If you're not using NordVPN, you're not doing the internet right. For instance, if you want to go and search music videos, like you want to watch a Creed video and have it be complete guilt-free, and so no one knows that you're watching a Creed video, that's how you use that.
You know, you bring up Scott Stapp, and I think he's actually the perfect example of somebody who should have been using NordVPN, because all of those years ago when he went on the Creed Facebook page and started posting about how the IRS had locked him out of his bank accounts and was tracking him, like, that's the dude who needed NordVPN. So
okay, we got to back up on that story a little bit. So Scott's back in the late 90s, early 2000s, there was this band called Creed, and they were very much a poor man's Pearl Jam, we'll call it, when it came out. With arms wide open. He was the lead singer. The band was huge, massive. Can you take me higher? He was a poor man's Eddie Vedder. But the band was huge. It was heavy guitars. The timing was right. A lot of people had backlash against this band. They're like, no, they sound like a Christian band. It's like, so what? They're making good music. And they did really well. They sold out arenas. They were massive. And then all of a sudden, we don't hear from them for a little while. A couple of their members leave to go to a band called Alter Bridge. And then Scott Stapp kind of does the solo thing for a little while. It doesn't work out great. The next thing you know, he's talking about how the FBI is trying to kill him. And his bank accounts were frozen and just completely, just what people believe, kind of lost his mind a little bit.
He was strung out on drugs. He was going through a very difficult time, very similar to the people on West Hastings Street in Vancouver, kind of similar, kind of look. Oof. Similar.
Boy, oh.
It's a different conversation for a different day, but he ended up bouncing back a little bit, but with the new solo Scott Stapp project, and like you mentioned, Alter Bridge was basically Creed with Scott Stapp replaced with Miles Kennedy. It was a great sound. I gotta say too, Mark Tremonti's got to be one of the best guitarists of the 2000s century. Just the power that he has, and there's the AOL sessions where they play My Sacrifice, Higher, With Arms Wide Open. That's only one guitar playing for the whole concert, and it sounds like there's like 13. It's just so powerful, and he's so good. And the sound of Creed is a lot of credit to him. But the like you mentioned, the poor man's Eddie Vedder. The Can You Take Me Higher?
My Own Prison.
And I think the best part, and even so Scott did an interview with Theo Vaughn a couple weeks ago, actually a couple months ago, and this is what kind of got me thinking about Scott Stapp for today's programming. But in every music video, he always has like the Jesus Christ pose, like Dave, you can take it from here, but I'll do it with the My Sacrifice.
Oh yeah, very they were very theatric in their music videos, that's for sure.
I watched the music video for Higher. You've seen the music video for Higher, Dave? You remember that one? When every shot is just the zoom into his eye, you back up, here's the body, you back up, here's the room, back into the next. It's just very over-the-top dramatic. And I think to myself, like, who signed off on this? Like, who thought this was a good idea? Like, I mean, I get it, having Scott Stapp on top of a mountain, on Mount Everest, pretending to be Jesus Christ, singing, with arms wide open, maybe wasn't the greatest idea, but some of those 2000s music videos were definitely over the top.
Yeah, well, listen, they're going to look back on the ones that we're watching now 20 years from now and go, hey, boy, what were they thinking? It all comes with the times, man. It comes with the times.
I mean, even put in perspective, Scott said in the interview with Theo Vaughn how his own son makes fun of him. His son's in the back seat. Him and his friends are giggling, and he's like, hey, son, what are you guys laughing about? And then he turns the phone to Scott, and he presses play, and it's just like basically making fun of with arms wide open, hey, hey, hey.
All right, one more video reference that you got to go check out, Travis. I don't think you've ever seen this before. Just type into YouTube Creed Shreds, and it'll be one of the funniest things you've ever seen if you're familiar with the band. Go watch that. I want you to give everyone a big hook on what's coming up on next week's podcast. We've been talking about this guy for weeks on end. I am excited to hear this podcast.
Yes, I'm excited to do it. So the federal legend who has single-handedly added a good 10 to 15 minutes to every podcast program we've done since about October, Joe Pace Jr.
Jackie Moon, baby!
The Jackie Moon, a professional hockey player, owner, coach, who traded himself to another team and then dubbed himself player, owner, coach, head coach, I should say, started as assistant coach, then the head coach, has agreed to come on the podcast. He said we're going to be recording on Monday, which will be ready to go. So I guess when you listen to this on Sunday, tomorrow we'll be recording the podcast, hopefully. But he's going to come on. I hope that this does as well as the Ian White episode. I mean, I want to ask about just like Joe Pace is the bus driver for the Mississippi Seawolves. Like, he drives the bus from Mississippi all the way up to Delaware. He went off on Instagram. I guess that they swept the Delaware Thunder over this past weekend. And he did a big Instagram takeover talking about how he was buying the Denver or the Delaware Thunder, how they're a dump of a town, how he's evicting Joe Biden out of the state of Delaware, that he owns it now. Joe Pace, 2024 for president. Obviously, you can guess which side of the spectrum he swings.
Fun fact for all those people that live in Delaware, all three of you, Delaware was the first state in the Union. It wasn't the first spot to be colonized, but it was the first state to actually become part of the Union. They kind of kicked off the whole Union of the United States.
Well, I'll give you an even better story than that, Dave. I was told by one of the current Mississippi Seawolves players that apparently, I'm not going to spoil the whole thing, but the team fighter in Delaware or in Mississippi isn't available for a fight one night. One fan offers Joe Pace a cigarette outside the arena, and he says, "You want to play tonight?" And he says, "What do you mean?" He's like, "Well, we need smokes in between, the intermission, because I guess Joe Pace smokes." And he says, "We also need a tough guy. So if you could, hand out smokes in between the intermission to the guys and then also fight sometime in the first and third, we'll pay it tonight. We'll give you $500, whatever the case may be." Signed him, and he dressed that night in Carolina. Like, what a...
God, I love that league. God, I wish I was a little bit younger.
I mean, Ian White was playing the fence. We got guys in the league.
I can't see 30s. Out of one eye. I'm not. No, don't put that in my head. Wrap up the show before this gets crazy.
Which eye is it that you can't see out of, Dave?
My right one. Right? Nah, okay, I shouldn't have told you in case we ever get into a fist fight.
Well, as long as you get hit in the right eye, you're fine. It's almost like Forrest Gump when they're saying, don't talk shit to him on his left side. He can't hear. Just talk shit on his right side. So Joe Pace is supposed to be coming on the podcast next week. So Dave will be off on holiday, spending time with his beautiful wife and kids. I will be talking to Joe Pace. I can only imagine the conversations we're going to be getting into. I cannot wait. If you have a question for Joe Pace, if you're listening on Sunday or Monday, preferably, if you're listening on Tuesday, it might be a little bit later, but leave a question for Joe Pace, leave a comment. I would love to know if anybody has any stories of him that they want me to ask him, because this could be a 3-hour podcast with the Jackie Moon of professional hockey, no doubt.
Good ending.
Give a friendly reminder that this new podcast, there's a new episode every single Sunday at 11 a.m. Eastern, that is 10 a.m. in Winnipeg, 9 in Calgary, 8 in the West Coast, in Vancouver and San Francisco. That is also 4 in Sweden, 3 in the UK, 5 in Finland, and 11 p.m. in China. I want to give an amazing shout-out and thanks to our amazing sponsor, the presenting sponsor, Sheath Underwear. If you're in the market for a pair of underwear, you got to get a pair of Sheath Underwear with the code BISCUIT69. That'll get you 20% off. And to the team at NordVPN, thank you for partnering up with the podcast. Pick up some Nord with the link in the video description. And thank you to all the viewers, Apple, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and the video version home here on YouTube. Our success of this podcast and the growth and the potential podcast and network deal that hopefully we have coming up with a boys trip down to New York City in June is impossible without your support. So thank you to everybody. And on behalf of the Winnipeg Raider legend, Dave Wheeler, and myself, we cannot wait to see you in 2 weeks, but I will see you next week with the federal legend, Joe Pace.
Polar Good vortex. Night, wrap up warm.
We float nicely. We're floating like a butterfly, stinging like gonorrhea today.